We'll duct our way into this rain report in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. From the snowless fields of Minnesota, I'm Kent Peterson, KC0DGY, with this rain report. This week, we'll conclude Hap Holly, KC9RP's conversation with Aaron Collins, N9OZB, frequency coordinator for the state of Illinois. Together with the Illinois Repeater Association, Aaron and the IRA do their best to maintain law and order on Illinois' 500-plus repeaters.
What if two repeaters want to link full-time to each other? That would, I suppose, help in close spacing to systems that might otherwise be problems for each other.
Yes, there's several different ways that repeaters can be linked, and there are quite a few linked systems in Illinois. Traditionally, links have been IRF links or telephone-type links that would involve using a link frequency at something outside of the normal repeater band. Just like repeaters, RF links are also coordinated, and those are on other frequencies that are not published. However, I maintain a database of those, and various repeaters that use them are using typically point-to-point beaming of signals. They're generally on 440 or 900 megahertz are probably the more popular linking bands. Those are generally point-to-point with high-gain Yagis that are a single fixed link and generally employ some kind of a PL or DPL or whatever to protect the link. However, nowadays, with some of the digital standards that we're seeing, most of the repeater linking is being done in the so-called IP domain or over the internet. The new Yaesu Fusion, the DMR, Moto Turbo stuff, and D-Star all have backends that have been well-developed so that they can contact other repeaters and link other repeaters together over the internet. Some of the P25 digital, there's been some work towards linking those as well. It's not quite as well-developed, but they also do have a linking solution for that. For just about everything but the old legacy analog systems, I have a method of linking now digitally as well as traditional analog linking methods. Narrowbanding is something that we are starting to adopt in the ham radio bands, and obviously there's been in the Part 90 or commercial radio bands, there's been a major change. The narrowbanding mandates that have gone by in the last few years, and the commercial radio entities have pretty much all been switching to that narrowbanding technology. We actually have adapted what they call a splinter channel scheme for some of these ultra narrow modes, the super narrow D-Star and some of the other very narrow modes like DMR or the turbo stuff. We've been able to successfully splinter those channels off of a normal center frequency in the UHF band, for instance, will raise one frequency by 6.25 kilohertz and lower the other by 6.25. And the net effect is we have two repeaters that will fit entirely in the footprint of a single analog wideband system. That way, there's no changes required to any of the adjacent channel spacing or the co-channel spacings that are involved. So far, we've had good luck with that. We've had this, the two-for-one packing, so to speak. We have quite a few systems now, probably 20 or 30 digital systems that are set up that way throughout the state and that have been operating successfully for the past 2-3 years that way. We probably won't see any modes that are narrower than that, but so far, we've had some very good luck with that. We're also possibly looking at narrowbanding part of the 2-meter spectrum in the future. That's going to require quite a bit more work because of the narrower spacing in 2 meters. We cannot do that nice 2-for-1 packing that we can get away with on VHF with the 25 kilohertz wide channels. Now, 2 meters, the channels are only 15 or 20 kilohertz wide. What we're thinking of, and probably about the only approach that'll be workable, is to designate a section of the band to be narrowband only, and then to move in repeaters that are capable of going narrowband to that area and moving repeaters that are not capable of doing narrowband out of that area. That's going to require a big, big shuffling of frequencies and changes that are going to be very tumultuous. That's what we're looking at in the future, but unfortunately may require an act of Congress to get through. So we'll see.
Aaron, can I put up a repeater today without having it coordinated by you here in northern Illinois?
Technically, yes. Practically, probably not. You can put up a repeater anytime, anywhere without coordination. However, doing so blindly will probably almost guarantee that you're going to interfere with an existing system somewhere else, either nearby or on an adjacent frequency that's next to yours, and cause some sort of interference problem. We do coordination to avoid that very problem. There is a couple of experimental frequencies. If you want to put up a small-scale neighborhood system, what I call a buddy box, you can set up an experimental repeater as long as you're limited to 50 watts ERP and 50 feet antenna height. There's two experimental frequencies on the 70-centimeter UHF band that are allowable for people to play with. They can experiment with getting a repeater on the air. They can talk to people in their neighborhood or their area, test a system, basically get on, you know, test a controller, test a duplexer, make sure that it's going to work as planned. And then eventually, if they're waiting for a frequency pair or something like that, once they get their formal frequency pair, then they can move the system out to a normal repeater pair. So there are two experimental pairs that you can play around with. It's two ways to get on the air without coordinating. And the other way, as I said, is to run uncoordinated, but that's generally not advisable or a good idea.
You're listening to the thoughts of Aaron Collins, N9OZB, frequency coordinator for the state of Illinois.
You're listening to The Rain Report from www.therainreport.com.
We haven't talked about the fun that coordinators have with tropospheric ducting.
I experience ducting a little bit once in a while. A few times a year, I can hear really distant repeaters. Occasionally, I can hear stuff in Ohio. In fact, one Christmas day about 4 or 5 years ago, we had an amazing duct that occurred, and I was speaking on a repeater in the middle of Ohio and talking to somebody from Canada who was working the same repeater as I was at the time. So band openings can be amazing when they happen, and they're a freak of nature, and they just happen, so there's no way to prevent them. Generally, PL is mandated in the state of Illinois. All repeaters are required to have some kind of digital squelch. Hopefully that will keep most of the various people on the system from hearing ducting when it occurs. If you wish to turn your system to a carrier squelch mode or turn off your received PL, then you would hear distant repeaters with other PLs out there. In very rare cases, distant repeater might be carrying the same PL as your system because of such a long distance connection that occurs between the repeaters. That is unfortunate when it happens. It's very rare, but it can happen. If it becomes a real problem, repeater owners could contact the other party and propose that one of the two of them changes to a different PL, and then they can mutually decide amongst themselves. That's what it's all about, essentially. Coordination is what I like to refer to as being an arbiter of gentlemen's agreements. We are all gentlemen. We've all agreed to abide by the various rules. My job is just to make sure that everybody follows them.
In all of your coordination issues with various repeater owners and repeater trustees, have you had to resort to going the legal route to have an issue resolved?
No, I'm happy to say the IRA has a long history of doing things above board and quite well. We've never had any legal issues. We've had a few threats from time to time, mostly from disgruntled individuals that weren't getting things going their way. Occasionally, I get a legal threat, but I remind them that no one's ever won in a legal action against IRA. Generally speaking, it's pretty hard to show losses or damages if you're denied a frequency because there aren't any available. Sometimes you just have to put on your big boy pants and grow up and take your medicine.
You compiled a letter regarding your position not to recommend the ARRL directory. Where can that letter be found?
I have sent this out along with the annual update that I spoke of earlier to all the repeater owners in the state, and I will be publishing it on the IRA website as well. I do believe it's an important issue that needs to be brought up. I've been the coordinator for the past 11, 12 years, and I spend countless hours of time doing this job. My only reward is a job well done. So I get much of that pride of accomplishment for making sure that the data that I maintain and publish is the most accurate information possible. When an organization like the ARL is deliberately publishing a data set that's inaccurate, contradictory to what is true, I can't help but feel it's a direct attempt to thwart my efforts. My personal email is Collins, C-O-L-L-I-N-S, at noideas.com. That's K-N-O-W-I-D-E-A-S. com, Collins at noideas.com. My contact info, phone number, and email and all that are available on the IRA website as well. That is www.ilra.net. All the IRA board members, as well as myself, have all our contact information published there for reference.
And that concludes Hap Holly, KC9RP's two-part conversation with Illinois Frequency Coordinator Aaron Collins, N9OZB. The Rain Report is copyright 1990-2015 Rain, all rights reserved. Now, for everyone connected with these Rain Reports, I'm Kent Peterson, KC0DGY, bidding you a very 73 and a 44 from the Radio Amateur Information Network. www.therainreport.com on the web, at The Rain Report on Twitter, and via iTunes.